I invited you to send me the books, the poems, the stories and songs and movies that you hold sacred. And today's readings come from WU members Lola Warren and Jessica Sapaglio. Lola Warren suggested this famous passage from the Hebrew prophet Micah. What does the Lord require of you but to do justice and love kindness and to walk humbly with your God? Let's hear that again.
Okay. What does the Lord require of you but to do justice and love kindness and to walk humbly with your God?
So let's hold that question in mind as we come to the second reading. It's a little bit longer. It comes from Anne of Green Gables by Lucy Maud Montgomery. Jess Sapaglio suggested this passage, and Jess is not able to be here today. She's traveling, but Jess, if you're listening on the live stream, we are so appreciative. Thank you very much. You might remember Anne of Green Gables is a book about a little girl who comes to live with a brother and sister aged 60 who have never raised children before. This is set on a farm on Prince Edward Island in about 1900. Anne is the little girl, and Marilla is the name of the lady who takes her in. The scene here comes on the second night that Anne is at Green Gables. When Marilla took Anne up to bed that night, she said stiffly, "Now, Anne, say your prayers and get into bed."
"I never say any prayers," announced Anne. Marilla looked horrified and astonished.
"Why, Anne, what do you mean? You must say your prayers while you are under my roof, Anne."
"Why, of course, if you want me to," assented Anne cheerfully. "I'd do anything to oblige you. But you'll have to tell me what to say for this one time. After I get into bed, I'll come up with a real nice prayer to say always. I believe that it will be quite interesting now that I come to think of it."
"You must kneel down," said Marilla in embarrassment.
Anne knelt at Marilla's knee and looked up gravely. "Why must people kneel down to pray? If I really wanted to pray, I'll just tell you what I'd do. I'd go out into a great big field all alone, or into the deep, deep woods, and I'd look up into the sky, up, 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 into that lovely blue sky that looks as if there is no end to its blueness. And then I'd just feel a prayer. When I'm ready, what am I to say?"
Marilla felt more embarrassed than ever. "You're old enough to pray for yourself, Anne," she said finally. "Just thank God for your blessings and ask him humbly for the things that you want."
"Well, I'll do my best," promised Anne. "Graciously, Heavenly Father, I thank thee for all the blessings I can think of just now. As for the things I want, they're so numerous that it would take so long just to name them all. So I'll just mention the two most important. Please let me stay at Green Gables, and please just let me be good looking when I grow up. I remain yours respectfully, God, and Shirley." "There, did I do it right?" She asked this very eagerly. "I could have made it much more flowery if I had a little more time to think it over."
And in a moment, she added,
"I just thought of it now. I should have said amen in place of yours respectfully. Shouldn't I have? That's the way the ministers do it, right? I'd forgotten it, but I felt the prayer should be finished off in some way. You know, so I put in the other, you know, yours respectfully. Do you suppose it'll make any difference?"
I don't suppose it will," said Marilla. "Go to sleep now like a good child. Good night." Thank you, Anne. So I want to take us back now to the covenant of this congregation, which, by the way, you can find on our website if you have forgotten the covenant. You can find it, just look for About Us at wu.org. Our covenant, as we heard at the beginning, says in part, we promise to try to live morally and deepen our spiritual lives. So that's kind of a strong statement, isn't it? It's not just we think it's a good idea to live morally and deepen our spiritual lives. We promise. It's not that we just want to try or we'll try when we remember. No, the members of this congregation have promised to try to live morally and deepen our spiritual lives. And as your minister, I feel some responsibility for helping you with that as you do your best to carry out this promise. In this religious tradition, we have never dared to prescribe exactly what that looks like. For a long time now, hundreds of years, we have had too much respect for each person's conscience, each person's ability to discern the inner guide that each of us has. We have too much respect for that inner guide to tell you exactly what it means for you to live morally and deepen your spiritual life. What we can do is listen to each other's stories. We can learn what has worked for other people now and in the past. We can take it in and see what it sparks in us. Take whatever is helpful and leave the rest behind. It doesn't matter. And so today, I would like to tell you a bit of my own story, to tell you how it has been for me so far on my own journey of trying to live morally and deepen my spiritual life, in the hope that my story will spark something in you, something that will be helpful or life-giving in some way. That is my hope. Please just take whatever's helpful in what I say and let the rest go. This is only how it's been for me. I was not raised in any particular religious tradition. My parents had both been raised Protestant Christian. One was Episcopalian, the other was Methodist. But by the time my sister and I came along, my parents had long since left the church. And so my primary religious practice was singing Christmas carols once a year. That was pretty much it. On the other hand, my parents both tried to lead lives that were generous and wise and joyful. So growing up, I watched them and I learned from them and I learned from teachers and mentors and friends. And I feel like I got a pretty good moral education about trying to be a good person, trying to make good choices, trying to live morally to help people and not to hurt them. One thing I did not get is any kind of guidance about how to deepen my spiritual life. In my family, that was like, does not compute. We did not talk about it ever. And I'm not saying that by way of complaint. It's just that's how it was. We just didn't go there. I guess I feel like in retrospect, I pieced together a sort of wordless spirituality, partly from books that touched my heart. I was an Anne of Green Gables girl too. Or like the Narnia books that we delved into last week. Also, I was so fortunate. I was really fed by growing up next to a lake and the trees all around. The place where I lived was very beautiful, and I feel I was so lucky to be able to just soak up the beauty of the water and the sun and the stars and the trees that were just so quiet. Nobody ever taught me how to pray, but I can relate to Anne's looking up at the sky and just feeling a prayer Not that I would have ever told anyone that's what I was doing. If I was even aware of it, I didn't have any words to talk about it. And oh my gosh, it would have been the most embarrassing thing ever. So that was me as a kid. I do remember feeling like a sort of spiritual exile when I was young. I remember talking with high school friends. I had some friends who were born-again Christians, and it was really important to them. And I could see that they had this thing, it was like a glow or a light within them, and I could see that it was bringing them so much joy, but it was completely inaccessible to me. I didn't understand at all. Or I remember visiting on a trip to Europe, I went to some of the great cathedrals, and I remember walking around in these majestic, these just stunningly beautiful spaces with this feeling of such longing, like, I wish this were mine. I wish I could belong here. But again, the Christian path was always very clearly not going to be my path. I could see and sense the beauty of those sacred spaces, but I could not claim it or access it in any way that felt authentic to me. And so I continued to feel like an exile, longing to taste what others could so clearly experience, but finding only dust in my own mouth. So when I discovered Unitarian Universalism in my late 20s, it was a relief and it was a revelation. I had never realized there was anything like this. I had never realized that there were these religious communities like this one. I sort of fell into a place I felt like I could be a part of, a tradition that didn't tell me what I had to think, didn't tell me what I had to believe. I did not know there was anywhere like that. The message I heard from the congregation that I sort of bumbled my way into back in the day was, you are precious. You are precious exactly as you are, and you don't have to change to be welcome here. You do not have to believe anything other than what you already believe. You don't have to pray in a certain way. You don't have to pray at all if it's not your thing. But it matters what you do. Your choices matter. Your actions matter. And here we are. We're getting together to try to help each other lead lives of courage, lead lives of integrity and love. And oh my gosh, that was a revelation. It was the first time that I had ever experienced being in a moral community, a group of people that were coming together explicitly to try to live better lives together. And the message that I could do that, and it mattered if I did, and that other people were there to help me, oh my gosh, it just blew me away. I hear those words of Micah that we shared earlier. What does the Lord require of you but to do justice and love kindness and to walk humbly with your God? It needs a little translation. We're going to get there for some of us, right? But for me, that really expresses the spirit of what I found in Unitarian Universalism. This teaching that what really matters is, are you trying to do justice in this world? And if you're doing that, that is enough, and that is religion. And if you are trying to love kindness, by which I understand, are you trying to relate to other people in a spirit of love and respect and compassion? And if you are doing that, that is enough, and that is religion. And the last one, walking humbly with your God, this is the part that may need a little translation for many of us. For me, what it means is, if you are listening to the voice of conscience inside you, if you are open to what some of us call the movement of spirit in your life, if you are seeking that which is holy, however you understand it, That is enough. And that is religion. You don't have to pray a certain way. You don't have to pray at all. I think Anne of Green Gables would have been a welcome and beloved member in this congregation. And I cherish so deeply that message in our faith. If you are trying to do justice and love kindness and seek the holy, that really is all you need to do. That is religion. And I believe that. But I will also say, for a long time, even in this faith that is so important to me, for a long time, I found I was still thirsty for something that I did not know how to find. Something that felt like the inside of a cathedral, or the moonlight on the water, or how you feel when you listen to the most beautiful song in the world. I was thirsty for that. So I read a lot. I read the Tao Te Ching, and I heard the Tao that can be named is not the eternal Tao. And I thought, that's it. It's that thing that there aren't any words for. That is what I'm after, and I have no idea how to find it. I read the Upanishads, the ancient mystical texts of the Hindus, and they told me, you are that. Within you is that self which is nameless and wordless, which permeates everything and is contained by nothing. And I thought, that's it too, but where is it? How could I touch it, connect in some way? And I read the Christian mystics who said that which we call God is entirely, entirely beyond our understanding, and yet we are in God and God is in us. And again, it sounded like they've got something huge and I want it, you know? And I didn't know how to connect with that thing which was not really able to be spoken about. Some people call it God, but that is not the whole of it. And so I was trying. I journaled a lot, and I still do. I love journaling, and I did yoga. I still do that. I tried meditating, although I am like the worst meditator. It's just not good. But I found that it was not enough. And then there came a really difficult time in my life. This is quite a while ago. I was in the midst of a long struggle with infertility, which is a whole other story. Sometime I'll tell you about that. I am doing really well now. So, but that was, suffice it to say, it was awful. It was just awful, and I am okay now. On top of that, at this time we had moved recently. I was dealing with all the stress of adjusting to a new place and mourning the loss of what we had left behind. And again, not talking about last year, long time ago. Just so you know. Anyway, I was really struggling. But one of the gifts in my life is I had a spiritual director that I worked with. And one day I was meeting with her, and something she said made me sit up and take notice. She mentioned to me that she had a personal spiritual practice of shamanic journeying. And I was like, what's that? And she told me a little bit about it. And I had only the vaguest idea what she was talking about. I had this idea that it was probably going to involve like hallucinogenic drugs. And I was also pretty sure that whatever it was, probably white girls from Minnesota like me could not try it without being guilty of cultural misappropriation. So, however, you know, something in me was really sparked. I was drawn to what she told me. She told me that she had this practice of working with power animals and compassionate spirits, stuff I'd read about, but like this is the first person I've ever met who was doing this stuff, working with them to gain advice, to gain healing, to gain support. And half of me was like, whoa, that is so far out there. And half of me was like, oh my gosh, like that's the most amazing thing I've heard of in a really long time. And so I began to learn a little bit more. I was really relieved when I found out that the way she practiced did not involve any drugs. It's just not my thing. No judgment, it's not my thing. Also, she too was a white girl from Minnesota. And I learned, in fact, that there are people of all different backgrounds all around the world, including white people like me, who have figured out how to do these practices in culturally respectful ways. So, okay, that was interesting. And long story short, I tried this practice and I found I completely loved it. Basically, the practice is you listen to drumming to help your brain get in the right space. There's a whole theory about brain waves and stuff, which we could talk about later. But it's kind of like you do your own guided meditation. Many of us have probably done guided meditation before. So, for example, you might imagine that you're going to a place in nature. And in that meditative, imaginative state, you might meet an animal or a human who has some kind of wisdom to offer you, and you can talk with them and see what happens. So in my first journey, I was so nervous because I didn't know what to expect. I was afraid I might have some kind of crazy out-of-body experience and not be able to get back to my body, which did not happen at all. But what happened was, in this imaginative space, I met a bird. And right away, the bird dragged its wing on the ground like it was broken. And the bird said to me, "This is what you think you are, that broken wing." But then it flew up into the trees and began to soar around and said, "This is what you are." Oh. It was such a powerful message to me. I had been struggling so much and feeling so broken. But this was a word of just powerful hope and healing. And it felt like this was not something that I made up with my conscious mind. It felt like it came from somewhere that was a lot wiser and bigger than me. It was just a gift. So I've continued to do my journey practice ever since. It's been my primary spiritual practice for several years now. I just treasure the wisdom and the love that I feel from it. Recently, I made a commitment to do a journey before I sit down to write every sermon to help me figure out like what really needs to be said this week. And so this week, what was coming up is you have to tell them about your practice. So that is what I am doing. Here I am. By the way, if you are interested in learning more, I'm starting to pull together a little monthly practice circle here, and I'd be happy to talk with anybody if you want to know more about that. But looping back to where we began today with our covenant and that promise that we all make here to try to live morally and deepen our spiritual lives, what I really want to do is just to encourage you to keep going and keep seeking the path that is right for you, the path where there is life. Because we all know there will be times in our lives when we are struggling, times when it is not at all clear what we are supposed to be doing or what would help us feel better. But my prayer and my hope for all of us is that we will persist through those dry times and have faith that it really is possible for each one of us to know joy and know connection. And further, that we will not always have to rely on faith that it is possible, but that each one of us will be gifted with that an experience, a living experience of joy and connection, giving and receiving love and growing and learning, just as we are born to do, each of us in the way that is right for us. That's what I'm here for. I hope that's what you're here for too. So bless you all. May you all find the joy that is your birthright. May it be so. Amen.